Hello, hello. Happy Monday morning. Allie Peek, TJ Pittinger, Will Thomas. We are talking SEC football like we do every Monday at 10 a.m.-ish. hi, guys. How are you? This was TJ, you had a very relaxing weekend because Florida State didn't play. So you had the joy of being able to couch rot without stress. And Will, you and I ate our feelings on Saturday. TJ, tell me your overall thoughts on the weekend from somebody that didn't have to stress about their game.
Yeah, no, it was a good weekend. I mean, we'll talk about all this, but the Georgia-Tennessee game was phenomenal. It might go down as the game of the year, and I hate to say that with, you know, what, 11 or 12 weeks left, but that was incredible, and just everything you wanted from that game, unless you're a Tennessee fan. But
it was almost everything you wanted.
But I will even talk about this when it gets to it, but I think Tennessee, you know, you hate to play the moral victory game, but, like, I think they've got a lot to be happy about in Knoxville, maybe more than we thought. With all the offseason drama, the Florida LSU game was entertaining. We'll talk about that one. Obviously, Texas A&M, like, the most thrilling result of the weekend. Thrilling final seconds. I mean, I thought it was a great weekend. Even the noon game, like Clemson, Georgia Tech, like that's what's cool is there was a great game in every window, and some windows there were a couple. Now, outside of those big games, I mean, not a lot crazy happened. I mean, obviously Vandy, we'll talk about Vandy a little bit, but yeah, I mean, it was a great, two of my rivals lost this weekend. So it was pretty easy to just sit there and have fun. But even outside of that, like even outside of like the haha and point and laugh, it was a really fun weekend for sure. It was, to me, it was just as good, if not better, than week one.
Will, we get to see, this season, I think more than I can ever remember, we're seeing some of these matchups that we don't see on a regular basis. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit about, Oklahoma and Notre Dame, but Texas A&M and Notre Dame. But talk about, in general, the idea that we're getting to see matchups that are not commonplace for college football fans.
I mean, it just makes every weekend so much more entertaining because, you know, you look at, especially like, this is kind of a bit of a reach, but like with those 14 playoffs in the past, like it was the same teams every single year. You know, Alabama and Clemson are always up there. And now with the expanded playoff, that changes, but also just the regular season, like we're seeing right now, it just makes the games way more fun to watch. And from a technical standpoint, it makes the postseason discussions easier. It gives you more clarity because you get some cross-pollination in between conferences to really be able to compare leagues, compare teams across conferences, which just makes the sport a whole lot better, which is why and with the SEC's new schedule next year, you'll just get even more of it, which I'm really excited to keep seeing.
I am a little sad Florida has canceled several of their out-of-conference games because of the move to 9. I'm fingers crossed that we don't cancel the Notre Dame home and home, though, because that is a bucket list for me. I will be in South Bend if that game is on. Let's stick with Notre Dame for a minute. Let's talk a little bit about that Texas A&M Notre Dame game. 41-40. Texas A&M squeaks it out. Notre Dame 0-2, but still ranked, which is, of course, a point of contention for many across college football. But a lot of teams didn't start with a 2-0, or excuse me, with a top 25 opponent, and they're 2-0 because they played somebody easy. But Texas A&M, going into this year, we thought, okay, Mike Elko has them trending in the right direction. They might be a force in a year or two, but looks like they might be a force this year. Are they a legit threat in the conference, TJ?
I mean, I think so. What's tough for them is that their schedule is still, still loaded, right? Like anytime you play an SEC schedule, but has it lightened up a little bit? Like Texas in the last game of the year, I mean, that's going to be tough no matter what. And it's on the road in Austin, but they look like trash to start the season. Now, I would probably wager that Texas figures it out at some point through the year. And so maybe if you're A&M, you wish you were playing that game next week instead of after Thanksgiving. But their schedule is tough, but I don't think it's like insurmountable. LSU, a team that we thought, I mean, again, they got to go into Death Valley, but LSU doesn't look like they're lighting the world on fire. Now there's a lot of time again for LSU to kind of figure things out and get things rolling in the right direction. But I mean, I think A&M's schedule lines up well enough to where, I mean, I still think that the SEC is going to absolutely cannibalize itself because I don't know that there's this truly dominant team like the Georgia 22 team or something like that that can just eat their way through everybody. Right. But there's no doubt that A&M is a legit force in the ACC and has a chance, right? Like, I know that Notre Dame's 0-2. I know they've lost, but I think they've lost to two really good teams, and they've lost on the last play of the game two times. Like, it's not like they've gotten dominated or something. Like, USF came back down to earth. Notre Dame is like legitimately two plays away from being 2-0 and maybe number one in the country if they were. So they didn't get it done. I get it. You know, there's a whole litany of things you could talk about with Notre Dame, but man, I think that A&M is really good. And I haven't even looked at, I'll let Will talk a little bit and I'll shut up, but I haven't even looked at the odds. A&M's odds for the SEC have to be in like, they have to be like in the top five. They've certainly been one of the top five most impressive SEC teams at this moment. So yeah, I think they're a force and, you know, they could certainly flounder and go 8-4 again, but it looks like this year's a little bit different.
I'm laughing at TJ saying like, you know, Texas looks like trash. We're talking about the number 8 team in the country. LSU isn't legit. We're talking about the number 3 team in the country. They're, you know, while maybe they haven't passed the eye test this far into the season, but that Texas A&M schedule is still, they still have to play a Florida team who, if they can get out of their own way, are incredibly talented. This LSU team, you know, their defense is phenomenal. Their offense hasn't put it together yet, but a veteran quarterback and Brian Kelly, it's hard to count them out. Are they a legitimate threat in the SEC?
Looking at their skill positions and what they can do explosively, the answer is absolutely yes. I mean, Mario Craver looked unbelievable last week, and Casey Concepcion, you know what we have with him. Other running backs look great. And I do like Marcel Reed a lot. He was 17 of 37 passing in that game against Notre Dame. And I don't know if that's a number that gets it done week in, right, week out in conference. And they gave up 40 points to a Notre Dame team that does have a good offense. And granted, 7 of those points was a blocked punt return. But as you watch Notre Dame through the rest of the year, I don't think you're going to see a team that is explosive and putting up 40s every week. I mean, they're going to score more than Notre Dame of, you know, years past because of how they're their profile, but that's just a lot of points. I'm still not totally sold on their defense. And Notre Dame, to a degree, kind of gave them this game. Like, A&M had to go out and win it, but the muff PAT, you had defensive holding on a 3rd and 16 on that last drive, and then they scored on 4th and 11. Like, Notre Dame had every chance, it felt like, to really close this game out, and they just didn't, which is both an indictment on Notre Dame for giving them the game, but also credits A&M for going out there and being able to take it. And just going back to A&M's schedule, like, those LSU, that LSU and Texas game, I mean, it's so weird because both are true. Like, these teams are ranked really highly. I don't know if Texas should be ranked up there right now. LSU was fine. But like TJ said, getting both of those teams in 5 or 6 weeks is harder because getting Texas next week is the best case scenario. Getting LSU in 2 weeks is the best case scenario because LSU, I think, can turn it around. Texas, you would think it has to click at some point, like he said. But A&M definitely has the potential. But I feel like that's something that we've been saying for the past 8 years about this team. So you never know. I mean, could they get all the way to 9-3 this year from 8-4? Maybe. Could they win 10 games? Possibly. They definitely have the roster. I think it just comes down to how the rest of the teams on their schedule do click down the line, mainly LSU and Texas.
I'll tell you, when you look at their schedule, they play Auburn next, right? So they get a bye. I think that Auburn game will be tough, and we'll see what Auburn looks like against Oklahoma here. But they should beat Mississippi State. If we're honest, they should probably beat Florida too, and that's not even me talking trash, but they're playing at home, and Florida has shown a lot of weaknesses. They should beat Arkansas. The LSU, the Missouri, and the Texas games are what it comes down to for me. They play South Carolina again. I know South Carolina beat the brains out of them last year, but they don't look the same this year. I really think I think 9-3 has to be the floor. Like, you really shouldn't drop all three of your hard games. Like, when you play LSU, Missouri, and Texas, you shouldn't go 0-3 in that. What's tough is they play all three of them on the road, right? And so that's what sucks for them. But man, I think 10-2 is possible. I think there's going to be a million points scored in that. This isn't a Texas A&M Missouri preview because that game happens in middle of November. But I think there's going to be a million points in that game. And so, has LSU figured it out offensively? Has Arch figured it out? I mean, if he hasn't figured it out by November 28th, he probably won't be the quarterback in that game. But if they can hold serve and just upset one of those three teams, which I think they'll probably be a dog in all three. If they can find a way to get one of those wins, I mean, 10-2 A&M's going to the playoff.
That game at Arkansas is scary, though. I'm not sure I'm willing to pencil that one in as a win. Arkansas looks good against, they can be legit. Yeah,
they looked good, man. They outside of a late turnover, we're not going to talk about the Ole Miss game, but outside of a late turnover, I mean, they beat Lane this weekend, and I know they had some quarterback issues, but their backup played fine. So Arkansas looks, maybe Pittman isn't going to get fired this year. We'll see.
That he and Napier are on the hot seat every single year.
Start out there.
Let's just cut to the chase, put him there to begin with. It'll save us all, you know, some time. Let's talk a little bit about Billy Napier and that hot seat. Florida lost to LSU 20-10 on Saturday night in Baton Rouge. And I think if you just read that highlight, right, that like that headline, you would think like, all right, Florida hung with the number three team in the country on the road at night. That is not a horrific performance. But if you watch the game, you know that it was a horrific performance. It was something completely different. It was almost like neither team actually wanted to win. Florida just made more mistakes, 5 interceptions, which is, you know, a ton, right? And 5 interceptions, uninspired play calling, kind of head scratching at times, I guess, kind of getting away from Jaden Baugh, who, you know, is the best player on Florida's offense at this moment. But Florida's defense played lights out. This is a defense that has only allowed 2 touchdowns in all 3 games this season, but they've lost the last 2 games, which is just such a wild stat to me that their defense can be so stout and they're still losing these games. But how long does Billy Napier have as the head coach at the University of Florida, Will?
If I'm in charge, he has until Sunday morning when they lose to Miami. Because looking at this, the game against LSU, Florida won the first down battle by 13. They were better on third downs. They had more total yards, less penalty yards, and had more time of possession. This team just cannot stop making dumb mistakes that loses them games. And it's been happening really for 4 years. I mean, because offensively, like I said, they only had 10 points, 6 yards per pass, 3 yards per rush. If you had told that Florida team going into that game, your defense is going to be responsible for only 10 points that LSU earns at home in Death Valley, you take that 100 times out of 100 and you're thinking, we're going to win this game by 3 scores. Then they lost by 10. Like, there's just something fundamentally wrong with this team where they just can't get over the hump. Like you said, only 10 carries for Jaden Baugh. They threw it to him 7 times. You're kind of fixing something that isn't broken, because getting him involved in the air is fine, but just hand the ball off to him. Nobody can tackle him. Hayden Hansen caught 7 more passes. Just too much for Hayden Hansen. But man, yeah, there's just something fundamentally wrong with this Florida team. And I think, especially if they lose this game to Miami in not great fashion, which I think there's a good chance that happens because Miami looks legit. Are they really going to have this cloud sitting over the program for 14 days and then trot him out at home against Texas? Because it's also clear that there are culture issues, because we saw at the alma mater, there was like one person there. It seems like DJ Lagway, healthy or not, his fault or not, he's just regressing under a guy who's supposed to be an offensive head coach. The offense is his responsibility. It couldn't be much worse. And like you said, only 2 touchdowns allowed this year. They're 1-2. They're wasting a playoff caliber defense on an offense that just cannot stop shooting themselves in the foot.
I will tell you, I always use singing the alma mater as kind of my bellwether for when a coach's time is up. I can pinpoint watching only a handful sing it for Muschamp, for McElwain, for Mullen. And now, obviously, we saw that on Saturday. I will tell you, when I was in Gainesville and we lost a week ago, that whole team stood at the band and sang. And so this is a change. This isn't like, you know, somebody's going to come out and say, oh no, that's, he just doesn't put emphasis on it. Like, it's a bellwether thing for me. But TJ, if you are Scott Strickland, when are you pulling the plug on the Billy Napier experiment?
Well, I might even turn that back to you a little bit and ask your thoughts. Like, is Scott relatively safe now with the extension and with Todd Golden and the basketball team winning the national championship? Like, is he able to make the fire? Because, like, that was our big concern last year when we talked about this a ton with Florida's bad start, was, well, Scott ain't going to do nothing, because as soon as, you shoot your life raft, you know, like while you're drowning. And so that would be my big question is, if Scott is relatively safe and gets to essentially make another hire at the end of this year, and then his tenure is now tied to this next coach instead of Napier, then yeah, I mean, I think it just comes down to how much booster pressure there is. You know, I don't think it benefits Florida to really let him go. They're not going to fire him. And somehow sometimes you see like a team kind of give an inspired effort after a coach is gone. But usually that's like when he's lost the locker room or when they hate their coach. I think these guys love Billy Napier for all of his faults. I still think this team you know, are they great offensively? No, they're not. Are they a mess, you know, discipline wise? Absolutely they are. But man, they're still playing. Like, they're trying hard. Like, I've not seen any kind of lack of effort. Now it's only been three games. So if Miami beats them by 40 again, like last year, and you see guys quit, then maybe my thoughts on this change some. But I mean, Florida's probably going to get to like four or five wins if I had to guess it right now. If you fire him now and guys can jump in the portal the next day, that could turn into like two or three, you know, like, and so is it maybe worth it to not do that? Like, is it worth it to maybe say like, okay, maybe we win one of these next four. Maybe we beat Texas cause they stink or something like that. You know, maybe we beat Mississippi State and Kentucky. Maybe we upset Ole Miss or Tennessee or Florida State or something like that later in the year. And we get to like five or six wins to just not be the national embarrassment of like two. I don't know. To me, it's like the season's over anyway. Does it really matter when you do it? And with this whole portal rule in effect, now I wouldn't do it. I mean, if you lose by 40 to Miami this weekend, that's not my prediction. I don't think they lose by that much, but if you just get embarrassed, maybe you just have to rip the Band-Aid off. But man, Florida's got too much talent on their roster to let that portal open up in September, right? Like, I think you at least got to wait till the Georgia game or something like that, because I'm not saying their whole team would just jump in the portal or anything like that, but it would scare me. As an AD, it would scare me enough to where I'd be like, I'll wait a few weeks.
So I think there's a lot to unpack in that. And Scott Strickland did just get a contract extension. It extends him to 2030. I think that was done for a couple of reasons. I think it was done mostly because that's when the renovation of Ben Hill Griffin Stadium is supposed to be done. And it kind of ensures that the person that started the project is there for the duration of the project. If you'd asked me, I would have liked to get rid of him before the start of the project so that he did not have a say in the outcome of a generational move for a stadium. I don't think mercenaries should get a vote in things that affect the next 100 years, but I digress. That is a different topic. I do think that he will feel safe enough to make a move. I think that was 1B of the extension, so that he did not feel as tied. Because last year, if he fired Napier, it was a condemnation of his tenure as athletic director. And remember, it was before Florida won this latest basketball national championship, which I think is what he's going to hang his hat on now. But this was his legacy. So if he fired him, I do think he was going down with the ship. I think that's a little different now. And, you know, UF now has an interim president again, but they don't have a real president, and we don't know how long that will take. And so there's a great chance an interim would punt on doing something like replacing an athletic director, but kind of be okay with the concept of replacing a head coach. But I think there's a couple issues with letting him go now. The first one is, over the summer, when we talked about what Florida's record would or could be, there was a few games that we circled as games that were more than toss-up games, probable losses. And I would say Miami and Texas are two of those games. So if you weren't going to fire him after he lost to USF, which they didn't clearly, if they let him back in the locker room after that loss, I don't really know that you fire him after he loses to a team that you thought he was going to lose to, even if he made the playoffs, over the summer, and that being Miami and Texas. So I kind of think you give him through those two games. And then if Florida loses to USF, Miami, Texas, they obviously already lost to LSU, and A&M in a row, I think that's where you have to make the move, is after that A&M game, because I can't see a scenario where you still have the locker room if you started 1-5 and your only win being against a glorified high school program. You are clearly not trending in the right direction. I've been told 8 wins is what he needs to save his job. I think the moment that 8 wins is off the table, you know, and we can say it's more than likely off the table at this moment, but when it is actually factually off the table, I think that that's when you consider a move. But you do have to think about the transfer portal being open. And right now the rule stands that the second your coach is fired, you've got 30 days that you can hop in. So if UF can postpone this a few weeks and maybe put some wheels in motion behind the scenes as to who might be the next head coach. And that's tricky because you more than likely want somebody coaching elsewhere, and they're not making the jump until that team is done for the season. But if you can line something up so that the wheels will move incredibly fast once the season ends, that will help you retain as much of this roster as you possibly can. But you're looking at a balancing act between just getting so toxic in there after a certain point, or, okay, they're not winning, but they still love each other and they're still fighting. So we're going to let this play out for a little bit. And wherever that tipping point is, that's where the firing needs to happen, I think.
Yeah. And you talked about this, you know, shout out the other channel, A Peek Inside Gators Football, but you, everybody that you brought on says this and it becomes cliche, but what we also should think about is everybody that you asked, hey, how many, what do we need to do this year to not to, for Napier to keep his job? Or they always say, well, it's less about a number and it's more about how they look. And admittedly, the defense looks great, but the team in general looks like crap, right? Like if they had gone out and say USF had like upset Miami and Florida like played well, there wasn't the spitting penalty and there wasn't the stuff, but USF was just like, shoot, they're a top five team. They're beating everybody. But you know, like then you'd say, okay, you still shouldn't lose to that team in the swamp considering the talent, but maybe the talent was wrong. Right. Maybe. And then if LSU just looked incredible right now and you played LSU to a 31-28 game where Lagway shined and man, Death Valley was just too much at night, that'd be a lot different story than going out and throwing five picks or blowing against a USF team that your rival the very next week beat their brains out, right? So I think that's important too. If they go down to Miami and let's say Lagway plays well and has three touchdowns and one pick, you know, like just plays relatively well and you just lose a tough road game to a rival, 31-28 or something like that, that's much different than, well, right now they're a 10-point underdog and we're all kind of worried like, dude, this thing could get ugly. And then you come home against an Arch Manning that hasn't been able to figure it out yet and he lights you up or just whatever, right? Like, I think the way those losses look, if you lose a couple more games here in the next stretch and you look like you're starting to trend the right way, I mean, the losses still pile up and they still matter. And it, again, if you don't get to 8, it probably doesn't matter anyway. But I do think what they look like, if they go, like Will said, if they go lose by this game by a million this weekend, shoot, he might be out on Sunday. We might be doing an emergency show. But I think what they look like matters too. They go down there and lose by 3, keep it pretty respectable. Miami's a top five team, right? Like, so there's not a lot of shame in losing to a top five team on the road when you're unranked. I mean, that's what 90% of teams do. But you can't go down there and lose by 20. You know, you can't get embarrassed like you did last year on your home field. And so what it looks like will matter too. Again, Texas is not a great team right now, despite their high ranking. You can't lose to them by 20 in the swamp, right? Either of those results, it'll happen faster than, you know, anybody wants it to. Well, maybe not the UF fans, but anybody inside the building or whatever.
Well, do you think that some of the information given to the media this summer by this coaching staff is contributing at all to fans' reactions to what we've seen? Like I'm thinking about, you know, so DJ Lagway didn't play essentially all spring or summer for all intents and purposes. He went through mental reps and that's about it. But we were also told things like he's been phenomenal. He, you know, this is much ado about nothing. Everybody is, you know, making a bigger deal about it than it is. You should see this kid's work ethic. Like, I can't wait for you to see what we see. And then, you know, in the press conference after the loss to LSU, Napier said something like, well, you know, we need to keep in mind that this is only week 4 of him coming back to practice. But that was not the vibe that they were sending out all summer long. Was there a way for them to have relayed that differently over the summer that would make us feel differently in this moment?
I mean, yeah, like, you know, don't tell fans that is going to be good, right? Unless they had full reason to believe, which maybe they did. But I mean, when you tell your fans things that will obviously amp up their expectations over the summer, and then you don't live up to them, you do have to deal with those consequences. And I think like last year with Florida State, like there was so much buzz around that team being awesome. And then they came out and kind of laid an egg. That's sort of the same thing that we're seeing with Florida this year. So yeah, I mean, when coaches come out and they're telling you all summer, like, you know, get ready, buy all these tickets, come see our team play. And then you buy the tickets and you lose to USF at home and you throw 5 picks on the road at LSU. Like, that's going to get everybody upset. It's going to make everybody angry. And so that's now where we're at right now, where both the fans are ready for an administration change. The locker room is getting lost. Everything has kind of had a domino effect to get to where we are right now with this Florida team, which is, I don't need to say it, but I mean, they're in a really, really bad spot.
You both have been to practices. I've been to practices. You know ball. I refuse to believe that what we see on Saturday isn't what they're seeing in practice. You know, the you play how you practice is not just a cliche. That's a real thing. And so is this coaching staff inept? Do they not know what it is that they're looking at in practice? Or are practices so easy that what they're doing there is going well, but it's just absolutely nothing like what is a real game experience?
I mean, DJ's not practicing. So that, I mean, I'm sure he is now, but like maybe but some guys are, yeah. So through the summer, I mean, he wasn't practicing. So I'm sure they just kind of chalked it up to like, oh, well, it's a true freshman out there, or it's Harrison Bailey out there or whatever. Like, it's not that big of a deal. But yeah, I mean, I think that is part of the issue, is that, yeah, he wasn't practicing. And then some guys are just gamers, right? Like, I will say that, like I've heard from multiple, I never saw it in person. I've heard Winston had like the worst practices ever. Like, he was terrible in practice. And so like, yeah, from people that like were there, like people on staff, like, no, he sucked in practice. But then somehow when the lights came on, he was just great. And I don't even think that's that uncommon, because like you're trying new things. You're trying to put things on film that you can correct. And you know, Allie, I know you know things about that. But like, I don't know.
As an individual person, but as a team, like let's say we watch Asinine play on Florida's offense on a regular basis. Like, I'm finding a hard time to believing that these plays ever worked in practice. And then like you put something in a game that you weren't able to successfully run in practice is, I don't know.
I'm sure the defense looks good out there, and maybe that's what they're chalking it up to, is the fact that, yeah, our defense is elite. And so maybe the offense doesn't have as much success, but I also think there's the aspect of like, you get familiar with guys in practice and you know their tendencies, and that probably, like, you know, again, not to relate everything back to FSU, but like Florida State's practices weren't bad. Now, it was a bad team on a bad offense on a bad defense. And so I'm sure they did well last year in practice, but like Florida State didn't see it coming last year either. Like, they thought they were practicing well. They thought, and when you put a bad offense against a bad defense, which is not really Florida's situation, but when you put that up against each other, yeah, it can look good, right? Like, go watch a Virginia Tech, you know, Virginia game, and it's like, yeah, it's a bad team versus a bad team. Like, of course, it looks good. They scored 30-something points, you know, each. But I think that's kind of – that would be my guess is, yeah, there are probably tendencies, there's mistakes, but maybe it's a pressure thing. Maybe it's just like, man, when the lights are on and they're the brightest, like, that's when these guys are just like – they don't have the – and I do think Florida's got a lot of mental not deficiency, but like, what's the word? No mental toughness. So yeah, maybe in practice they don't see it as much. And I'm sure there is an aspect, and I had Snell on last night, practice like you play and stuff like that. But when that pressure is different, like, they just, for whatever reason, have no mental toughness, and there's not a lot of pressure in practice. Right. And so I think that could be part of it, you know, but we're grasping at straws here trying to figure out what the hell is wrong with this team.
Eric Wilbur says it's because practice isn't competitive.
I mean, I do think with the familiarity of like, really like, is Napier really having them go 150% in practice?
And is there a winner and a loser in every single thing that you're doing? Because if there is, right, you automatically are giving more of yourself because you do want to win. That's how all of these guys are wired. They're all competitors. But is it just, hey, you know, 8 suicides, or is it 8 suicides and the top third, you know, are done with practice and the bottom 2/3 of you are out here for another hour, you're going to get some different level of effort from your players. It's the same exact drill, right? But it's a different way of motivating them. And I don't know.
Allie Peake out of practice is what
I have volunteered to coach special teams over the years. I have volunteered to count heads so we send the right number of guys out. No one is taking me up on these things, but guys, I am available. all right, let's pivot for a minute. We'll talk about Florida Miami a little bit down the road, but let's talk about Georgia Tennessee. That game was an absolute barn burner. I totally forgot we were going to talk about LSU's offense too. Sorry there, TJ.
Yeah, let's switch it up. Let's go back to LSU.
Let's go back. All right. Stay on that game. Fine. We'll stay on the rundown. All right. LSU's offense. Nussmeier did not look a ton better than DJ Lagway on Saturday. It's just that the bar was incredibly low, so he kind of squeaks by. But their offense has not been great. What do you think LSU needs to fix? They've got a playoff caliber defense. I think we saw 2 playoff caliber defenses on Saturday night. Unfortunately, we saw a 2-10 offense and, I don't know, a 5-7 offense, you know, left in its own little bubble there. What can LSU do to get back on track to kind of match that defense? And honestly, they don't even have to match it. They just need to be serviceable, and that defense is good enough that it'll carry them through some games.
Definitely. I mean, for the offense, like, it's just, it's so much talent everywhere. It's so much things that you can look at and be really excited about. But just going in, like, their third down efficiency is not that great. Their running attack has not been that great. So when, obviously, when you can't run the ball and you're a little more of a one-dimensional team, you're going to be slower. But overall, for LSU, like, the receivers, they show flashes of being great in space. You get Caden Durham occasionally running the ball downfield, but it's not consistent. And when I'm thinking about this LSU team, I think back to 2019, when their offense was obviously a championship-caliber unit, and their defense just had to be okay. And it wasn't at first, but it came along, and they ended up doing what they did. This year, their defense seems like it might be championship good. So can their offense just develop and become an okay unit? And I don't know if that's true yet. I like to think that they can be because of how good they are on paper. But LSU no longer has a good win. The Clemson win no longer moves me. That team looks bad. LA Tech, they were slow against. They let Florida hang in at home when they had five turnovers. Like, obviously everything for an outlook of a team looks more dull when it's your defense that's the best unit and it's not quite as fun to watch as an offense. So I do think LSU is they're totally okay. But their offense, like, it's just the little things, like mainly just being able to run the ball a little bit better, because then obviously that opens up the passing game. You're able to control the tempo a little bit more. So I do think they'll run to form, but for right now, they just need to work on, you know, can we run the ball for 4 yards a carry and be better on third downs?
TJ, can this offense improve enough to carry, you know, to carry enough of the load for this to be a playoff team?
I thought Brian Kelly's comments were interesting. Obviously he's super snarky and always has to, you know, yeah, whatever. I don't crap on BK too much in this because they are 3-0. But yeah, I mean, I think it's concerning when you score less offensively at home than USF did in the Swamp, right? Like, I'm not trying to take any credit away from UF's defense because I do think they're really good. But like, how many possessions do you need to score more than 10 points? And well, I guess, you know, so they scored more because one went back for pick six. But I mean, the interception by Lagway at the end of the first half, like, that was a free 3 points that they gave them. And then obviously the pick six was a free 7 points. And so how does your offense do worse than USF's? I don't understand that. In Baton Rouge, and then again, versus them playing, there's probably a bit of an aspect of this where, and I will, to Brian Kelly's credit, there's probably a bit of an aspect of this that LSU wanted to be incredibly conservative once they felt how the game was going, because they knew that Florida was going to continue. I mean, you said Eric called it before the first pick happened. He's going to throw however many interceptions, right? So there was probably an aspect of BK kind of saying, "Hey, we ain't gonna put the ball in harm's way. Like, we're not gonna take chances in this game, because that's the only thing that's going to give Florida a chance. If Nuss throws an interception in his own territory or something like that, like, that's how Florida beats it. They're not going to line up and beat us, right? Like, they're not going to. They, you know, if both teams played well, LSU was going to win this game. But with Florida playing poorly offensively, like, we're not going to give them anything. So maybe if you're an LSU fan, that's kind of what you hold your hat on, is like, yeah, we just need to not lose this game. And it might be ugly, but all that matters is winning. But we'll find out in a couple of weeks when they got to go to Ole Miss, you know, because I understand that LSU's defense is good, and I don't expect Ole Miss to go for 40 points or anything like that. But in 2 weeks, when they got to travel up to the Grove, like, we'll find out if they can score with them, because they ain't gonna hold Ole Miss's offense to 10 points. That'll get clipped, obviously, if it happens. But I do think that, you know, there is some concern. Maybe you can wrap your head around, they just wanted to be conservative because Florida was literally putting the game on a silver platter for them. But there's got to be concern. It's now three. I mean, Georgia Tech scored more, and I get it. That was at home versus playing Death Valley on the, you know, the other Death Valley on the road and all these things. But, man, you look at some common results and you just say, man, Georgia Tech should have scored. Georgia Tech got stopped inside the – like, they should have had, like, 17 more points in that game against Clemson's defense. Like, they're not very good. And so I just look at LSU and I'm like, man, what is wrong? And Will's right. Like, they can't run the ball at all. And so it puts all the pressure on Nuss, who we both sold on earlier in the year. So it's not like I'm surprised by this at all. Sure. There's no reason that USF should outscore LSU in a common opponent just 7 days apart. And there has to be concern about that.
An interesting note, we crunched a lot of stats over the weekend at this house, nerd alert. And, you know, one of the things that Eric, my husband, wanted to look at was air yards per completion and per attempt for Florida. Florida averaged 3.35 yards in the air per completion, which is mind-blowing, but only 5.85 yards per attempt. And that actually even factors in, like, the 35-yard interception and stuff like that. And if you counted how many, like there was 15 attempts behind the line of scrimmage, 25 attempts were under 5 yards. So if you factor in everything that actually started behind the line of scrimmage, Florida actually ran the ball 80% of the time. I mean, we're chalking those up to, you know, completions when you're really just, you know, pitching the ball to the running back right next to you. But I think that speaks to the conservatism that you were talking about, TJ, that Florida was going to play incredibly conservative. And so LSU probably did want to kind of match that because there really wasn't any need to do anything more. Yeah. Essentially. But I, you know, I think this is going to be an interesting thing to watch. I always, you know, Corso thinks LSU is winning the national title, and this was his last prediction before heading off the set of game day. So I'm going to hope to the football gods that that's the way.
Everything else he did on week one seemed to be correct. So he might be onto something with that.
Yeah. So I kind of love that. It's going to be an interesting thing to watch. Brian Kelly was incredibly offended by the reporter's question, asking him essentially what's wrong with your running game. And we're 3-0 and he was pissed, and it's a great clip, but they are going to have to evolve or they will not stay undefeated for long. Okay. Now let's pivot to Georgia, Tennessee.
I'll allow it this time.
You'll allow it this time. Okay. So this was such a fun game. It was a barn burner. There was a point in time where I was like running the math in my head of what this potential score could be. And like, it just, the over kept, I hope all of you bet the over, like as it continued to increase throughout this entire game, because they were just scoring points on points on points. And I think that it is abundantly clear that Tennessee won the QB sweepstakes, getting rid of Nico. And I know Georgia won 44-41, but Tennessee's for real, guys. Well, what did you think watching this game?
I mean, you could not have asked for a better 60 plus of football, really. 998 combined yards of offense, 51 first downs, 675 passing yards total between both quarterbacks. It was incredible. I'll start with Georgia because they won. Gunnar Stockton shut a lot of people up. I think he was threw for 304 yards and 2 scores, also ran for a touchdown, 9.5 yards per pass. He was way more explosive in the air than a lot of people thought he could be, and even more than I thought he would be. I thought he was going to be this sort of really effective, you know, game manager, short passes, run the offense down effectively. He surprised me with how explosive he was. They had 198 on the ground as a team also, but I mean, Colby Young, Zachariah Branch, and London Humphreys are an awesome, awesome trio receiver. And then for the other side, for Tennessee, passing offense looked really, really good. 371 for Aguilar and 4 touchdowns. Chris Braswell had 177 yards and 3 touchdowns receiving. But for Aguilar, he kind of looked like what I thought he would, where he's going to produce, he's going to hit explosives, and he's also going to throw 2 interceptions. And he's also going to miss some passes, you know, in that second half, which are adjusted, that you really wish he'd be able to hit. And Tennessee only had an okay rushing attack on the day, so he was doing a little more pressure on Aguilar. But I do think you're right. They won the sweepstakes with Aguilar over Nico. And that's just the thing with Joey, I think. He's going to produce. He's going to have big numbers. But if he throws multiple picks in all these games, you're going to have situations like this where Georgia's able to eke it out. And this was the most Tennessee loss of all time, right? To have your rival who you haven't beaten in 8 years on your home turf, up by 14. You got a 40-yard field goal to win the game. Push you right and lose in overtime. Like, It was a brutal game, but I think you're totally right. Tennessee does look like a playoff team that I did not think they were in the preseason.
Yeah.
And you're getting, with Aguilar, he's producing more than I thought he was. He just needs to make sure that those 2 picks, that's kind of, you can't go any more than that, or else the game's get out of hand.
I mean, as a Florida fan, I'm sitting over here saying I might trade some explosive plays and keep a couple of trade off, because currently I'm getting neither. TJ, UCLA fired their head coach yesterday. So, Nico over there not thriving. Is it Heupel? Is it his offense? Does it even matter who's quarterback? Because he just is able to coach him up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a part of it, right? I'm not trying to take anything away from Aguilar, because he's so much better than any of us expected. But I mean, you know, Nico didn't look like this last year, you know? And so I do think that the quarterback's ability matters. And I think what we all thought was, man, like when these lights come on against UGA, against a Kirby Smart defense, like Aguilar's probably going to struggle. And maybe in the third quarter he did, but outside of that, he was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Stockton and Aguilar, I know Mateer's up there. I know that Green's up there at Arkansas. I know that other guys, you know, Pavia is always going to be considered. There's other good quarterbacks play. Was that the best two quarterbacks in the league playing each other on Saturday in Neyland? You know, I mean, again, I like Mateer a lot, so I'm not, you know, I'm not dropping him, you know, in my rankings, but shoot, they both looked good. And so I, you know, especially, you know, Stockton got to play against a couple of corners that were banged up and not as experienced. So, you know, they've got a tough test with Alabama coming in 2 weeks, but man, yeah, I'm super impressed with Tennessee. And yeah, I mean, their schedule still got landmines all over it, right? You got to play Alabama on the road. You got to play Vandy. You got to play Oklahoma. You know, they got to go to the swamp, which even when Florida sucks and Tennessee's good, like they just can't find a way to win in the swamp. So like there's just stuff all over here, but you're looking at their schedule and you're like, man, they should beat Florida, right? Like they should beat Vanderbilt at home. And then you find a way to, shoot, if you were to upset Alabama or beat Oklahoma, which I think they'll be in both those games, yeah, I mean, they could be a 10-2 team again that goes to the playoffs. Now, what happens when they get to the playoffs? Who knows? But it was the most Tennessee choke ever. Like, it kind of felt like it never felt to me like, oh, they're winning this game, right? Like, once Georgia came back and, you know, to take a lead in the second half to start it, you're like, man, this is going to be a Tennessee choke at the end here. And that's ultimately what it was. That fourth down play by Georgia getting the touchdown was absolutely, if they stop that, they win the game. But I think, you don't want to play I said this in the intro, but you don't want to play the moral victory game. But if you're Tennessee, you have to feel decently good. Conversely, though, Georgia had a lot of questions coming into this game, playing what, Austin Peay and was it Marshall first weeks, and didn't really show anything that inspiring to go into Neyland and to be down by a ton, which I said this on last week's show. Tennessee always starts fast. It's can they sustain? And they started fast again, and you've got an offense that hadn't really shown a lot of signs of life. I mean, Georgia's the favorite to win the SEC at this moment, and I don't know why that would shock anybody because it's still Kirby Smart and it's still the most talented roster in college football. But if Gunnar Stockton can continue to put it together, their toughest two games, well, the Texas game doesn't look that tough, and Bama still hasn't beaten anybody with a pulse, though it's early. They get both those at home. Florida doesn't look like it's going to be a super big challenge in Jacksonville. So I just, yeah, like they've got a great – Georgia's got a great chance to, I mean, go 11-1 again, 10-2 at the very worst. And, you know, they're going to go back to college football playoff after our 2 weeks of doubting Kirby Smart again and being kind of shown like maybe you shouldn't doubt that guy.
Listen, I love Kirby Smart. I don't think that there is a better active in-game coach than Kirby Smart. I think his adjustments are always spot on, and I think he's an absolute psychopath, and I love that about him. He takes no prisoners. He would truck his mom if that's what it took to win, and like that's why he is such a perfect fit for this conference. But there's a lot of people in our comments that are talking about the defenses of both of these teams, and that essentially that the numbers are gaudy because the defenses are crap. Do you think that that the defense of both teams needs to improve if they're going to have a legitimate shot down the road?
I mean, both units will get better by default. Georgia's defense is Georgia's defense. What that was you got a Josh Heupel offense fully unloading a dynamic passing game and a good running game for the first time in the season. They were always going to score points in that game. And for Tennessee's defense, TJ mentioned it, they were down both their starting corners, right? So there was a lot of banged up injuries for Tennessee that helped Georgia pass the ball around a little bit more. And then for Georgia, like, you know, Tennessee in that first quarter, it was all just deep shots, right? Like overall, consistently speaking, Georgia's defense played fine. It's just that when Aguilar was able to nuke the ball downfield and Browser went up and knocked the DB over with another great catch, like that pumped a lot of the numbers up. So I think both defenses are okay. It's early in the season. You know, the defenses this week are going to look totally different now than they will in November. I think both units are just fine. This game, obviously, was higher scoring than I thought it was going to be, but I do think it went just, you know, it wasn't that much of a shock to me that this amount of points were scored. I think both defenses are going to be totally fine.
I thought this was maybe the best game of the weekend. TJ, you said it might have been the best game of the year already happening.
Hope to be wrong on that.
Be wrong on that for sure.
But it might have been. It was so good.
So fun. It was particularly fun to not have anything invested in it because I'm sure, you know, Tennessee was just
left. Well, I bet on Georgia, so.
absolute broken heart at the end of the day. So you had some skin in the game. I did not. I just sat on my couch and fully enjoyed. And Neyland Stadium
should have let Georgia kick the extra point.
Say it again.
Should have let Georgia kick the extra point in overtime there. That would have helped a lot of people out.
Yeah, bro, I just need the money line. Thank God.
But let's pivot a little bit. Let's talk about South Carolina. They lost bad to Vanderbilt, 31-7. Sellers leaves that game. It was rough. You know, I saw a South Carolina fan tweet something like, you know, we were losing with or without Sellers, but I loved the excuse of being able to say you only beat us because our quarterback went down. Vandy looks like the real deal. And South Carolina, I think we have a lot more questions about them than we maybe did at the start of the season. They play Missouri. What were you going to say, TJ?
Yeah, what was interesting about that is, remember I told you that maybe Brian Kelly went conservative because he knew Lagway was hurting his own team? It seemed like Clark Lee did the opposite. It was like, hey, Sellers is out. Like, we're going to pounce on that. Like, we're going to – and I think when you're ranked – Vandy was unranked at that time, and LSU was a top five team. I think when you're top five, you don't need style.
You don't need that, yeah.
You just need to win. And Vandy was like, no, we're going to beat the crap out of this team right now, and we're going to take chances because it's probably not going to hurt us anyway if we do make some mistakes. And so not that they were like running, you know, they weren't like super tricky or anything, but it was like, no, we're going to be aggressive and embarrass the crap out of them. Like, we'd have all been impressed if Vandy won this game 21-18 or something, right? Like, because you still win into those guys.
31-7.
Yeah, like, you know, Sellers being out certainly hurt them, but Sellers wasn't playing cornerback. You know, Sellers wasn't running the, you know, like, they still scored. And so, Vandy was incredibly impressive. And, man, you're South Carolina. You were thinking about this game earlier in the year, and you're thinking, man, Virginia Tech, South Carolina State, Vandy, Missouri, Kentucky, we're going to go to Death Valley at 5-0 or have a really good chance to go there 5-0. We didn't know how good Pribula would be, which we'll talk about the Missouri game here in just a second. But now you're looking at it and you're saying, man, are we going to go in and upset Missouri? Are we going to beat Kentucky at home, who hasn't looked terrible this year, like we all kind of maybe thought they would? Now you might be going to LSU down at 2-3, 3-2 at best. And so I think there's a lot of, is Sellers back? You know, concussion protocol is not always just 6 days. And if he hasn't practiced all week, and he hasn't looked good to start this year either, anyway, South Carolina had a lot of high hopes because of the way last season went, returning a lot of guys. There's a lot of concern there, and I think that, man, they have a couple of days to figure it out because the defense giving up 31 at home to Vandy certainly doesn't inspire you. When I was talking about the good quarterbacks in the league, Pribula is up there. You know, like, that offense will absolutely eat you alive if you're not ready to go in 6 days. So, yeah, or 5 days, I guess. But yeah, I think the concern level in South Carolina has to be through the roof right now. Injured quarterback, defense doesn't look great. Team's a mess, and the schedule is not easy at all.
Well, Missouri beat Louisiana 52-10 this past Saturday. And Sellers is listed as questionable. As TJ said, concussion protocol kind of differs per person. Obviously, you have your minimum number of days that you can return to play. But, you know, if you don't pass every little benchmark along the way, that timeline gets extended. Is there a path to victory for South Carolina in this one Saturday?
I don't know. I mean, the line for Missouri is they're currently favored by 13.5. So that is a Lenora Sellers is going to be on the sideline type of line. And just for Missouri, they were playing against Louisiana. Ahmad Hardy ran the ball 22 times for 250 yards and 3 scores. And Marquise Davis ran the ball 20 more times, also for 100 yards. This Missouri offense is so good. And I was so wrong about it over the summer. They can both run and pass it incredibly well. I think their defense is really, really good, Missouri's. And Carolina, even with Sellers, they've looked slow. And now with Luke Doty, who had both a pick and a fumble last week against Missouri, against Vanderbilt, sorry. I think Missouri has a massive, massive advantage in this game because I don't know if Carolina can go on the road and, you know, find what they need at Missouri without their quarterback. And I'm starting to fall in love with Missouri a lot. I think Missouri is going to be able to handle them pretty easily in this one. And I'm just bummed out because I thought Sellers was going to do it all this year. I thought he was going to be my Heisman. And now obviously the injury hurts, but he hasn't looked like the quarterback I thought he was going to be this year. Carolina hasn't looked like the team I thought they were going to be this year. So yeah, I think Missouri is going to kind of lay the hammer this week. And they're going to show everybody that, like, they're very much legit this year.
I feel like Missouri is always a little bit sneaky good, if that makes sense. Like, not necessarily good enough to make a playoff, but they're perennially good enough to make some noise, wreck some dreams. Do you think, TJ, that they break out of that? They can get over that hump this year and maybe actually be a playoff team? Or are they built, you know, for 8 wins and some, you know, some tears from some team that they make miss the playoffs and that's the ceiling?
I mean, I just think their schedule, though it is still kind of landmines all over, I you know, and I kind of go back to that each time is, you know, now that we have, you know, 3 and 4 data points on each team in some cases, like just kind of looking at who they have left. And I mean, they're, you know, I think they're going to beat South Carolina this weekend. I think they're going to beat UMass next weekend. So, I mean, when you start out, what's that? Is that 4-0, 5-0? Then you welcome, I mean, they get some of their tougher games they get at home. Like they get Alabama at home. They get Texas A&M at home. Like those are very winnable games. Now we may reevaluate Bama if they go into Athens and win that game handily. But they get a bye week before that. Right. So, I mean, even that is not, you know, the worst thing ever for Missouri. They got to go to Vanderbilt. They got to go to Oklahoma. Those will certainly not be easy. I think the game at Auburn and the game at Arkansas, like those are tricky for sure. But yeah, I mean, Missouri should win 10 games this year. Like even if you drop to Alabama and Oklahoma, or go 1-2 against Bama, Oklahoma, and Texas A&M. Like their offense is good enough to compete. And I think, you know, it's a long season, right? And we're a quarter of the way done with Missouri's at this point, which is sad and crazy just to have to admit. But they're good enough to me to go 10-2. Will they get there? I mean, I don't know. That's kind of been Missouri's crutch, you know, is like, yeah, they can be a 9 or 10 win team against an easy schedule, but can they really compete? Can they really get to that? I mean, their offense is absolutely good enough. Will it be all year? What will Oklahoma, Alabama, and Texas A&M be as we get into October and November? Those are big questions that need to be answered. And then, yeah, you can't go trip up the week after playing Alabama. You got to go to the Plains. I mean, you can't go trip up against Auburn if they end up being a little bit better than we thought they would be, which we'll talk about the Auburn-Oklahoma game here in a minute. But yeah, I mean, I think the path is there. Like when I'm looking at Missouri, though, I think their floor is like 8-4. I mean, without unless something crazy happens, which yeah, Missouri fans want more than that, without a doubt. But yeah, you know, their ceiling's 11-1. You know, not that I think they'll do that. I think they'll probably be 9-3 or 10-2. But their ceiling's pretty high and their floor's pretty high, and so we'll see how it all shakes out. But I don't think they're a national competitor by any means. I don't know that I buy them that much, but they're certainly a competitor in the SEC.
I mean, a 10-2 team that makes the playoffs but has no legitimate shot at a national championship is as good an argument for not expanding the playoffs as any that I have ever heard.
What are 24 teams like drink ones or 30? Yeah.
All right. Well, say that again.
I was saying everybody should be in the playoff.
Everybody. Like,
no, that's the regular season. What the regular season is.
Yeah, what if we have 136 team playoff and we start it on Labor Day and we finish it on Thanksgiving and then we take the best teams from there and just put
Okay. All right, let's pivot a little bit.
Wait. Prediction on this one, Will?
Missouri 30-14. I think they laid the hammer. Carolina's gonna walk in there beat up and just kind of you know, deterred. I got Missouri by a good bit here.
Yeah, I'll go Missouri. I'll say the defense bounces back a little bit, but gives up the same amount, 31-13. I if Sellers starts, I'll go 31-21, but 31-13, assuming he doesn't play.
42-17, Missouri.
Yeah, sorry, South Carolina fans. I wish they were. Yeah, I like South Carolina. My best man at my wedding was a South Carolina fan, but I just don't see it.
Okay, now. Let's talk a little bit about this upcoming Oklahoma and Auburn game. For reference, Oklahoma beat Temple 42-3. Auburn beat South Alabama 31-15. This is the Jackson Arnold revenge game. He looks, honestly, I think everybody was a winner in this trade-off here. I feel like Oklahoma looks better. Auburn looks better. Jackson Arnold looks better. So whatever arrangement this was, everybody ended up a winner in this. But how much more does this game mean to him after how this transfer portal stuff has played out? Well,
I think it means a lot, right? Because for Arnold, going back to a situation where everything was bad, the fans didn't like you very much. Like, they all know that the whole offense was bad last year. They're going to blame the quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, it was a bad situation. I do think both sides are way better off now. And I just can't wait to see the reception that he gets. Like, that place is going to be absolutely electric when he comes out onto the field. This game's going to be really, really, really good. Oklahoma favored by, 6.5 right now, I think. I think it's going to be right around that. Should be a one-score game. I'm excited for it.
TJ, what do you think?
Yeah, I just wonder how they call this game, because they, I think Hugh has done a good job and the offense has done a good job of not asking Arnold to do too much. Now they've played a couple of teams that they're, you know, you're not going to lose, you know, those games, but I mean, they look good against Baylor and they used his legs effectively. And Oklahoma, I mean, Venable, we know what Oklahoma's defense is, and as much attention as Mateer is getting and that offense is getting because of their turnaround, I mean, this is going to be one of the better defenses that they see all year. Maybe the best, you know, who knows, man, maybe the best defense they see all year. And they're going into Norman, who just absolutely shut down Bryce Underwood. Now, I think obviously Arnold's a little ahead of where Underwood is at this point in their careers, though I think Bryce will be great one day. But I do think that's kind of my question is, how is this game called? Do you have to be a little bit more risky with Arnold? Do you have to do a little bit more? I think he's completing like 70%+ of his passes right now. He does that, I mean, they're going to go out and win the game, you know, like, but I don't, you know, do I have faith that a quarterback's going to go into Norman, Oklahoma against Brent Venables and complete 70% of their passes? No, not really. Like I wouldn't take many quarterbacks in the country to do that. So how is this game called? I mean, Auburn's going to have to lean very heavily on their offensive line, which is very good, and be able to kind of run the ball, shorten the game. But I mean, yeah, it should be a thriller. I like, we'll predict in a minute, but I like Oklahoma in this, but I don't think that an upset here is too wild for me to imagine.
Oklahoma has won all three times that Auburn and Oklahoma have played. They beat them 27-21, Jordan Hare last year. That was going to come from behind victory. The transfer portal has created such interesting storylines. I think it's so wild that a player could be a quarterback for one team one year and then the next year be quarterbacking the opposition. It is such wild times that we are living in. But if you're Auburn, how are you scheming for Mateer, Will?
I don't know.
What did Bobby used to say? I don't know. We just need to go in and pray a lot, I guess.
I mean, I like Mateer a lot, but I mean, looking at Oklahoma's offense, if there is a weakness, which there is, sorry, their offensive line is a little bit weaker. So you have to be able to take advantage of that. Can you make Mateer uncomfortable? Now, he's very good improvising. He's very good on the move. He's very good outside of the pocket, but that's what you have to do. You have to take advantage of what I think is a weaker O-line for Oklahoma and be able to really get to him. But I do think that Oklahoma's biggest edge is in explosive passing, because Auburn's defense, especially their secondary, hasn't looked awesome. Again, in that Baylor game, they were letting, you know, 10, 12-yard passes over the middle really all day. Their front's been okay, but having a bad grade against explosive passing for Auburn against Baylor, Ball State, and South Alabama, that overall is a little bit concerning. And Oklahoma, they've stat padded a little bit against their weaker teams, but I like that they had to point against Michigan for how good their explosive passing game has been. Oklahoma's running game, like I just said, is still a question, but I don't even know if they have to run the ball super effectively in this game because of my questions about Auburn secondary and because of how good that passing offense is. And TJ brought up Venables. I think that Venables versus Arnold, that edge goes to Venables in terms of knowing that quarterback, knowing what he likes, more importantly, knowing what he hates to see on the football field. So my edge there is to Venables against Arnold, and my edge is to Oklahoma's passing game against Auburn's secondary. But if Auburn's going to stop Mateer, it's because they're able to get through that offensive line really, really quickly, make him uncomfortable, and hit him around a little bit.
Liquid Flames in our comments says, scheme for Mateer, get the bus driver drunk so they don't make it to the stadium. TJ, is that the best we can do there? Oh, TJ, we lost you sound-wise.
Yeah, I blew my nose a second ago and muted and then never unmuted. So you guys are welcome for having to hear that. We talked about all the good quarterbacks in the SEC. I'd still have Mateer one, right? Like I was giving, you know, Joey and Gunner and stuff love earlier. But yeah, he's really good, you know, and just his legs being able to be such a big factor. Guy who absolutely, you know, what makes him so different than Cam Ward coming out of Washington State too was that he actually wants to run. Like he wants to hurt you with his legs, and Cam didn't, right? Like he's able to, but they're just so different there. And that's tough. You know, I mean, Arnold wants to run too. So it will be a pretty exciting game on both sides from that perspective. But I do think that like just the added threat of how good he is with his legs is really tough to scheme against. I mean, we've already seen huge upsets happen when quarterbacks are very mobile in the swamp, in Doak. Like this is tough for, you know, Georgia Tech this weekend. When quarterbacks are willing and able and want to run the ball, that's really tough for a defense and a defense that is playing on the road as an underdog as a touch. So, yeah, I think Mateer, I mean, to me, the difference in this game, I mean, Will mentioned Venables. yeah, I mean, I think both sides of the line, both sides of this, like the advantage goes to Oklahoma, and that's why they're a touchdown favorite. But yeah, you're playing at home. You like your D coordinate or your, you know, coach, your defensive coach against their offense, and you like Mateer against Auburn's, you know, defense. And so, yeah, it's a tough task for Auburn to get this done. But I mean, a mobile quarterback can hurt you just as much as he can help you, you know, as if you're Oklahoma. So, but I think figuring out some kind of way to limit Mateer, you know, whether that's, you know, containing a little more than, you know, coming straight up the field, or whether that's using a spy or whatever their kind of game plan or scheme is for this. That is, to me, that's the biggest key, is you can't let that guy beat you, and he's good enough to beat everybody on their schedule.
All right. Prediction time. Will, who you got?
I got Oklahoma, probably like something like 31-21. I think that their offense is really going to go crazy against that secondary. Jackson Arnold and Auburn will still get theirs. They're too talented to not get to the 20s, I think. But yeah, I got Oklahoma by 10.
TJ?
Yeah, I like that score. I won't steal it exactly, but yeah, I'll go a little bit lower at like 27. You know what? Also, I'll go 27-20. So they cover. It's close. Auburn doesn't get blown out. But I don't think that it's ever like super, super in doubt. I just kind of think Oklahoma plays from out front. And Auburn's just not enough in this game. So I like upsets. I'd love to predict this the other way, but I'll just go with the chalk.
Ah, well, we wrote down 1 point different. I wrote down 28-20. You know, I don't love agreeing with you guys. Okay.
I'll be cheering for a missed extra point so freaking hard on Saturday. Notre Dame 2.0.
All right. So let's switch gears. Let's talk about Florida, Miami. This is game day's game of the week, which is mind blowing to me. I know they don't want to always pick these all SEC games, but I cannot understand how Oklahoma Auburn isn't a better destination for game day this week than Florida, Miami, but here we are. Maybe that helps the Florida faithful that would like a new head coach if this happens, you know, front and center on game day and we get lectured for 3 hours about culture. But you know, Miami beat USF 49-12 the week after USF upset Florida. Miami seems to be clicking on all cylinders. Their defense looks really good. Obviously, they're putting up some points. Is there any world where UF can upset Miami?
You want to go first?
Yeah, either way. I think the answer to that is yes. Like, I'm not trying to, like, just cater to the UF fans or hate on Miami. There is a world where that happens, right? I think it's DJ Lagway obviously being 100% sharper than he was on Saturday, but their secondary is still their biggest weakness. I still think that, I mean, listen, I hate to admit this, and we probably all three hate hearing it, but Miami to me has the most impressive resume in the country. Like, if preseason rankings weren't a thing, I think Miami would be the number one team in the country right now. I think what they've done has been that impressive. And so, you know, there is a path. And so even for a top five team, or maybe who I would have as the number one team, I think that their secondary is still the weakness. And so if Florida can be more accurate through the air, then I think they're in good shape. I think Florida has struggled to run the ball at times and struggled to give the ball to their best player out of the backfield. And so I don't have a lot of faith in them being able to run the ball super effectively. And so that puts more weight on DJ Lagway's shoulders. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if he bounced back. I said that last week too, though. Like, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they're able to come back. I don't want to take anything away from LSU's defense and just put it all on Lagway, because their secondary is really good. Miami's isn't. And so I do think you saw USF have some success. You saw TJ Carr in his first game have some success passing on Miami's secondary. And so, yeah, that's the path. And then defensively, I think Florida will be really good. And I think they'll keep them in this game for as long as possible if the offense can muster anything at all. Which, you know, outside of the LIU game, obviously they haven't been able to muster anything. So yeah. I think the path is, yeah, your defense plays lights out again, like they did against LSU. You know, maybe Beck gives you a couple. He's thrown some risky passes, though it hasn't really burned him yet. And then Lagway is better. And that's what it all, you know, yeah. Okay, TJ, yeah, you just said the defense is good and the offense is good, so they might win. But yeah, like if Lagway is sharper and can limit his turnovers to like one mistake instead of five, which the game was kind of out of reach at that point anyway, you know, once he's throwing those ones in the fourth quarter. But, you know, I do think that that's the path. Is Lagway is much better than he was, and you take advantage of their secondary because that's the weakest part of their team.
Well, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Carson Beck threw three picks to this Florida team last year in Jacksonville. So he does not like playing Florida very much. And Florida's defense this year, I'm willing to say it's better than it was last year. So can they get to him again? Can they cause some issues? I do think the Miami's offensive line is incredible. So I do think it'll be pretty hard for Florida to get pressure on Beck. I mean, because they got zero sacks against Nussmeier, and that was a way better situation to get pressure and sacks than it is this week. So I am worried about that. But the Florida secondary likes Carson Beck. So we can see we'll see how that goes again this weekend. And like TJ said, Lagway can't be worse in theory, right? Like that was the bottom of it, of what we saw last week. So if he's able to improve, and a bunch of those picks, he's throwing into double and triple coverage. Like this is what the fourth interception. Like there are three guys. It was the same pick that Jackson Dart threw in the swamp last year. Like it's three defenders and one receiver. It's just things that you almost never see really from anybody. So can he clean up the mental aspect of the interceptions? Will he still have some bad throws that get picked off? Sure, why not? But I don't think he can be worse. The offense, I think, we'll see how they fight. I think this week, Mike, I have more questions about how much they fight than I did last week. Because with the alma mater, with potential locker room issues, I am probably worried about how this team comes out and responds. But in terms of Beck, I think they can get Carson Beck a few times. Like TJ said, he's throwing some risky passes. And offensively, I don't know if they can be any worse.
Yeah, I mean, I think talent-wise, these teams are so similar to each other. They have recruited at a similar clip. Florida has actually developed more NFL talent over the last 3 years than Miami has. My main concerns come from mental toughness and in-game coaching. And I don't, you know, no game this season has made me more comfortable about those things than I was prior to the start of the season. In fact, it's the exact opposite. But I do think that DJ Lagway has such a strong arm and is such a good talent that I cannot imagine at some point he doesn't start putting it together. This is worse than what we saw out of Lagway last year as a true freshman. So even if last year was his ceiling, we know he's much more capable than what we're currently getting at the moment out of him. I do think he's a competitor. I do think he's a student of the game. The odds are in the favor of him putting this together. Now, does he put it together for Miami is, you know, a different question. But I'm interested to see if any adjustments are made moving, into this game. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And I feel like that is the Billy Napier era kind of in one quote. But there is still time to right the ship. You know, as a Gator fan, I will always root for Florida to right the ship, and I hope we win every game for the rest of the season. Now, whether or not I think that's actually going to happen is different than what I'm personally rooting for. But in theory, changes could be made, and this team could be a lot better on Saturday. I do think this defense has the ability to keep it close. I do think that Beck does not play well against Florida historically, and I do believe that this is a playoff caliber defense. And I really think if this offense could just figure out a way to just be serviceable, it could carry this Florida team a long way. You don't actually have to go out and score 40 points, but you do need to be able to score 21. And that is where Florida has fallen short both of the last two games. But I think if you score 24, you probably can beat this Miami team. As long as your defense plays like we've seen the rest of the season, it just seems like such an uphill climb to picture this team scoring 20 points, which is wild when we're talking about an offense, you know, whose commander was predicted to be in New York by, you know, at least one of the people sitting on this panel this summer. But I don't know. TJ, if you could fix one thing for Florida going into this game that you think would make a big difference, what would it be?
I don't know. That's freaking tough. Outside of the head coach, you know, I probably Lagway, right? Like just his confidence. And I really, maybe a bigger picture thing would be a bigger picture thing would be their mental toughness, which maybe his confidence would fall inside of that. But yeah, they're not very mentally tough. If they go down 14 in this game, which is very possible with how good Miami's offense has been so far this year, they go down 14 in this game. Like, do they have any fight back? Like, you just saw Georgia do it last week, right? Down 14, who cares? There's a long game. Florida goes down 14 in the first quarter, and this one, that game's over. You know, like, we all change. I mean, you guys won't, but like, we all change our TV channels, right? Like, to something else that's going on at the same time. And so that mental toughness that Florida just doesn't have, whether we're spitting on guys or holding on, you know, touchdown plays, they're getting called back, or just everything or anything that could happen. They're just not very mentally tough. And that's on coaching. Like, that's, you know, but there is some on the players too. There's accountability. There's self-accountability too, of just like, dude, this is a rival. This is a top five team. We're not getting embarrassed today. Like, we all got, most of this team was there last year. We all got embarrassed at home last year in a season we were super excited about. Like, this ain't happening again. So I think mental toughness would be probably more than any of the X's and O's, more than any of Lagway's footwork, more than any of his bad decision-making, more than any of the running game. We struggle to figure out why they won't go to ball. It is absolutely just, they've got to be tougher mentally.
But is that something that can be changed in a week?
Probably not in a week. You know, I mean, there's some soul searching. I'm sure there's a lot of, like, you know, pointing out the positives of, man, we had this, if not for this, we had, you know, look at the defense, look at the special teams playing well, this, that, and the other.
Part of the problem, the amount of positives that are pointed out.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just me.
Maybe you don't want, you know, to focus on, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, they did it last year, you know, like they got punched in the mouth a couple of times last year and they responded. And so now they've been punched in the mouth a couple of times this year, and maybe they can respond to be tougher. I think Miami's a better team right now than, you know, LSU or Ole Miss or Florida State or any of the teams that Florida beat in the second half of last year that we thought were good wins. Not Florida State wasn't a good win, but the way they beat them was. So yeah, I mean, I think that's what's tough is can they flip that switch again last year? Cause I mean, yeah, can they do it in 6 days? I don't know. But I think that they did it last year. So there's something that they could kind of pull out of that team. But I mean, you can be as mentally tough as you want. And at the same time, you can't throw more than two interceptions in a game, you know, and really two is probably too many. But yeah, like that would be my concern there is, I mean, it can be done, but who knows, man.
Well, what about you?
I mean, I'll go like X's and O's here. I'm worried about Florida's offensive line in this game because they have not looked near as good as they should, as we thought they were going to be over the summer so far. And Miami's defensive line, I'm not sure you can name me three that are better in the country. So we talked about Lagway needing to be sharper, needing to be more confident. I don't know how confident he can be if Reuben Bain is breathing down his neck the entire game. So the blocking is going to have to be better, you know, and that starts with the running game. Can you slow down the pass rush by having Jaden Ball go for 5 yards to carry? He'll do it, but are you going to give him the ball? We'll see. Yeah. So I'd probably say the offensive line play is what I'm going to look at, because if Lagway is going to improve, if Florida's going to be able to keep up with Miami's offense, they're going to have to block that front seven for Miami.
All right. Score prediction time. TJ?
Yeah, I said this last week, and I guess Florida did keep it kind of close, but I think it's relatively close, but I think Miami wins by probably 14. I don't know, something like, and I do have a lot of faith in their defense, but I don't in their offense. So I don't know. Yeah, I'll say 10 points, 30 to 20. I think Florida's offense gets going a little bit better against a weaker defense, a weaker secondary, but I just don't think it's going to be enough. Maybe that's a little high scoring against Florida's defense, but eventually I don't have faith that Lagway protects the ball. And so there could be some stuff that's like short fields for Beck and all that. So 30 to 20 Miami.
What you got, Will?
I'll say 27-17 Miami, just a little below TJ. I do think this game's going to go under that total. I think it profiles as, you know, Florida's defense will be good against Miami, and Florida's offense, that matchup of the trenches, I think, is really, really bad for the Gators. And I do wonder about what TJ just said about this team quitting, because I think it's totally possible that if they get down by 10, we could see that happen.
All right. I wrote down 21-10. So obviously very similar to this LSU game, but until they show it to me, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in this offense to put up points. And I would probably, venture to say that there's a possibility that at least some of those 10 points don't actually come from Florida's offense, but Florida, particularly with the way that Beck likes to sling it around there.
Two field goals and two safeties.
Good Lord. That is hopefully not a possibility, but you never know these days. All right, guys, this was really fun. This was our longest live yet. Thanks for hanging out with us. I felt like we had a lot to get into. Will, you know, you've got Tailgate Talk USA that, excuse me, SEC that everybody can go and follow you on, but you've been spending a lot of time with us on this channel too. So you've become a very familiar face over here, but tell everybody where they can follow you and argue with you on X.
Yeah, W Thomas Sports is my personal Tailgate Talk SEC everywhere else. If you just want to find my stuff, you want to pick on me for being a Gator fan. I'll take it at this point.
Not a whole lot of option for us here. TJ, what about you?
Yeah. TJ _ Pittenger. And then I do a national show called College Football Addiction. You can go check out. So you can come wait for when Florida State drops the ball and come make fun of me for that when it inevitably happens, but we'll see.
All right. Make sure you are checking out our other channel, A Peek Inside Gator Football. We can commiserate over there. Hopefully maybe we'll have something to celebrate on Saturday, even though clearly none of us on this panel are that hopeful. We appreciate you guys hanging out with us, and we will see